Group meeting, Friday, 17th May, 1985. This age witnesses the dissolution of formal religion. Hordes of dull-minded people, either intoxicated by easy affluence or sensual gratification, or reacting with hate against frustration and miserable circumstances, have lost interest, if they had any, in religion in any shape or form. I don't think that needs any expansion. Everyone knows that now. Added to this is the confusion and painful perplexity produced in many thoughtful and devoted people through suffering which they cannot understand, or through the discrediting of several old religious ideas and beliefs by modern science and psychology, or by secular philosophies mulishly hostile to religion. Now, of course, we must realize that always there has to be a discarding of certain old ideas and beliefs. But there are groups of people who set about throwing religion completely out of the window, you see. That is absurd altogether, because religion has a very, very important part to play in the life of mankind until mankind fulfills at least one of the main purposes of its existence, namely to promote the evolution of our consciousness, that is to say, of the mode in which we are aware of the world in which we live, and of ourselves and people, and our relationships and so on. Its evolution to holistic consciousness. We are at present separatively, isolatively conscious of everything. Everything outside our own organism is the other thing or the other person. That is true insofar as our sense impressions, we see something outside our own body, we touch something outside our own body, and so on and so on. So this consciousness of otherness is so strong that there are not right relationships, harmonious relationships between the individual and between everything else, and with everything else, you see. Now, with holistic consciousness, which is the fruit of living the religious life, one of the great fruits of living the religious life, one is constantly aware in terms of the totality and not only in terms of oneself. Self-consciousness has become universal consciousness in that sense, that one is sensitive to the totality. That doesn't necessarily mean that you know everything that is going on in Timbuktu or China or doesn't mean that, but you are sensitive to it, you see. And if and when it is necessary for you to know, you can know. Because of that sensitivity, people have called such things telepathy, haven't they? They are investigating telepathy and so forth, or clairvoyance and so forth. Well, in holistic consciousness, there is complete clairvoyance, complete clairaudience, complete telepathy, and so forth. And it is accurate, because ordinary, some people have sensitivities which are more than the ordinary sensitivities. But what they receive through those sensitivities are often misinterpreted by the brain, because the brain is heavily conditioned, you see. And therefore, it is misinterpreted. and therefore you get wrong ideas, wrong relationships, wrong actions in consequence. So that is one of the great things that man has to realize. And evolution, I would say definitely, is proceeding in such a manner that the human race is working towards the realization of a holistic consciousness. Then, and only then, we shall be truly human. At present, I am just subhuman, on the way towards that stage. That is the true human fulfillment. And of course, the great spiritual teachers of the world, and they were not only the founders of the religions of the world, but there have been several hundreds actually throughout the last 5,000 or 6,000 years who have realized that state of consciousness. The Buddha, for instance, in the Isigili Sutta, mentions 108 such names, mentions them by name. And of course, he says they have to be regarded with the utmost reverence and respect. But of course, we don't know them, so we can't do anything about it now. So now, this hostility to religion in the present world, there is so much hostility simply because people are able to satisfy their pleasure drive and their ambitions and all the rest of it. And they say, what use is religion? It hasn't done any good to anybody anyway. So they say. But they are hopelessly wrong. Now, that doesn't mean that there aren't teachings in the religions which we have to discard now. We are at the stage where we can discard them. And since last September, we have been talking about such things. You know, one of the prominent beliefs, religious beliefs, all over the world of religion, is that there is a continuity after death of the body, and the soul is judged. And as a result of that judgment, you have, in the theistic religions, heaven or hell for all time. Now, you know, one can challenge that teaching completely. How is it possible for a finite, limited mortal to live in such a manner that he can produce an infinite, unlimited consequence for himself, assuming that there is something which is himself continuing after death? So I, for one, have completely thrown heaven and hell, the old teachings, out of the window altogether. Also, the idea of survival, it really won't stand water. When we say I or you, use those words to identify one's own body or what we call our mind or feelings or something, and we postulate an immortal soul, you see, which goes through these consequences. But if the soul is immortal, it's entirely immaterial, isn't it? It doesn't belong to the material sphere, because nothing material, nothing which is manifested, lives forever. It comes into being, it has its period, short or long, as the case may be. In the case of a stone or a piece of metal, it can last for millions of years and so on. But at the end, there is dissolution. You see, so death comes. Now, since birth and death form are characteristic of the whole of existence as such, whatsoever exists, then manifestation is not immortal. It is immortal in a sense only. You can try to destroy some matter. All you do is that you change its form. Take a lump of paper, say, and try to annihilate it. You can't. You can burn it. All right? If you weigh the paper, and if you have the weight of the oxygen used in burning it, those two combined weights will be exactly the same as the weight of the ashes and the gases which may be formed and so forth. So matter as matter is for us indestructible. It is there permanently. It has changed form, you see. Now what we call the body is not merely matter. There are the various manifestations of the primordial creative energy to which we give various names. And there is the context in which that primordial creative energy functions, of infinity, of eternity, of immortality. You see? So what we call the immortal, the transcendent, as well as what we call the material and the perishable, perishable meaning that it will just change its form, you see. Substantially, you can't destroy it. You may say, what about the atom bomb? Yes, what about the atom bomb? All that happens is that so much matter as matter has disappeared. So much plutonium has disappeared, but it has been converted into so many different energies. So the totality remains the totality. It never is more, it never is less. Now this is a very important fact. And the fact that matter can be transformed into energy, and energy becomes concretized as matter, means that this separation which existed in the minds of men throughout thousands and thousands of years, that the spirit and matter are completely different, no longer holds. See, this creative energy manifested as matter just becomes energy again when you try to destroy matter. And the creative energy in its turn just becomes matter as such. So any ideas of an immortal soul going through heaven and hell is really quite nonsensical. Also, you read the descriptions given of heaven and hell. Descriptions given in the Zarathustrian scriptures, the Hindu, the Buddhist, the Christian scriptures particularly. Dante, for instance, in his Inferno, gives a very detailed account. Now, if you read those scriptures of what happens in heaven and hell, what do you find? Those descriptions are of the earth, earthy. The same things that happen in this world here and now happen in that world. Now, how can we be so stupid as to transpose material experiences and material things onto the plane of infinity or eternity? It just doesn't apply. It is immaterial. How can the soul suffer anything at all? If it is immortal, it cannot suffer anything like the body suffers. Our heaven and hell is here and now in body and psyche. In thought and feeling, we can suffer hell, can't we? Or we can enjoy heavenly ecstasy. In thought and feeling. Bodily, we can suffer pain, misery, illness, disease, and so forth. But apart from that, you can't apply that to a postulated immortal soul. The statements are quite illogical. So, whilst there are the people, I think the humanists dispense with God and heaven and hell and everything. Now, they are quite decent people. So long as a person lives decently and virtuously, it's all right. Never mind what he believes. One may believe all the old teachings, or one may discard them. The reason why I suggest discarding teachings like a permanent heaven and hell and so forth is just this. The fear of hell has never made mankind virtuous. Vice and evil still flourish, and perhaps in greater measure in some ways, simply because of our technical skill and control. And look at brainwashing, for instance. Didn't exist in the past. So we can care, and but it doesn't matter whether you believe this or believe the other, so long as one lives virtuously. But to live virtuously, the religiousness in us has to be nurtured. There is no getting away from that. Because with religiousness, we are responsive to something which is transcendent, which is greater than us, which is more inclusive than our mind and feeling tells us, you see. So, whilst we can discard, and we must discard, outworn beliefs as such, we cannot discard religion as such. Now, the official custodians of hard-pressed, organized religions, unable to create faith afresh by being living exemplars here and now, try to save formal faith by actually stooping to the use of worldly techniques rampant today. Compulsive persuasion by advertisement, by cunning psychological methods, by holding out the bait of spiritual powers and hierarchic positions, and by all the other paraphernalia of exploiting men's inclinations and minds. Clerical intellectuals rehash outworn ideas in pseudo-scientific jargon or in psychological garb in order to keep abreast of secular knowledge. The great theologians spin out webs of discursive thought in answer to mounting modern criticism, quite forgetting that discursive thought is but the sepulchre of personal living realization, and that at best it has only a temporary stimulating effect. Thought never added a cubit to spiritual stature. To heal the fresh outburst of disease, new medicine is needed. The eternal verities are undoubtedly eternal verities, but the scriptural word which they ensoul has to be uttered with power in a new tongue after the march of centuries, else the old word fails to energize the living present, as is the case today. Consequently, so many people, religious, irreligious, and non-religious, suffer from a growing spiritual malaise. We see that in the number of different cults and sects which are flooding the world today. People are sort of rushing to them because they feel somehow deep inside this spiritual need, and they don't know where to go, what to do, and so forth. So they'll try this spiritual liquor or that spiritual liquor and try to assuage themselves. That's all a mistaken thing. They don't realize that it is only from within themselves, and by first of all by complete self-understanding and self-knowledge, that their consciousness will open out to reality, to the truth. Man as a true human is essentially a religious being, and only secondarily a political, social, and economic animal. This is where these theories like Marxism and so forth fall down, because they try to attribute everything to economics as such, which is utterly nonsensical. I have done a certain amount of study of the history of economics, and what did I find? That the next economic expert broke down the philosophy of the previous expert. You can start with Locke and David Hume and go on to Mill and Ricardo and all the rest of them, you see. And each one says, no, the other fellow was wrong. Then you come to Marx and Engels and those people, and they say, oh no, all those people were wrong, we are right. Always think of Shakespeare's wonderful wisdom, which made Puck say, oh Lord, what fools these mortals be. The sooner I see that I am a fool, the healthier and the happier I will be. Wherever and whensoever his religious nature is thwarted, he is ill, miserable, and on the downward path, and every aspect of his total life bears the scars of his thwarting. Thus, the present situation is charged with an urgency, poignant and dangerous. So we'll go on. How may the pure flame of religion be rekindled today? There are missionaries all over the world who devote themselves to the propagation of the particular faith to which they belong. But no local culture of the past, no formal garb of the existing great religions, Christian, Buddhist, Hindu, or any other, can effectively meet today's world need. There are many liberal spirits who work for the unification of all religions, but no syncretist nor eclectic universal religion will save man from suffocating in his spiritual vacuum. See, the fundamental reason for this is that each man is individual. He is unique. He is what he is. There is no one else in the world today like him. There never was in the past anybody like him. There never will be anybody just exactly like him. And we as individuals have to find our own way. What the past has bequeathed to us can be helpful and useful. It can give us hints, it can give us certain indications which are valuable, but it can't do anything more than that. We have to discover the truth entirely for ourselves. Otherwise, our consciousness is prevented from evolving and developing into holistic consciousness. That is the reason. There are well-intentioned good persons around whom grow new cults and whose adherents believe that they have the panacea for the world's ills. But they will not provide the bread of life, for their philosophies and theories and the practical disciplines they recommend are like alluring shallows detracting one from the midstream course of meaningful living. None of the above make or can make the needed response to the unique present. That response, which would rekindle the pure flame of religion today, could come only from those who have themselves realized the transcendent. Because that is the energy, the power, the creative energy and the healing power which affects our transformation. Nothing else. It does not come from outside. It has to come from within ourselves. We have to make the first move. And when we make the first move, the totality responds in such a manner that we make the second move ourselves. That is the extraordinary thing. You'll find it very difficult to come across anybody who sees this and tells you this. We individually have to take the first step. Our first step affects not only ourselves, but it affects the totality. So there is a response from the totality to us as individuals, and that makes us take the next step. You see, this is how man progresses. Man is a conscious being. He is not an automaton. He is supposed to be Homo sapiens, but he is far from sapiens. He is very much stultus still, very foolish, and doesn't accept his personal responsibility for striving to release perfect humanity from within himself. So, none of the above make or can make the needed response. That response is, I have read that, comes only from those who have realized the transcendent. The founders of the great religions of the past were such men. They all, Krishna, Zarathustra, Buddha, Christ, announced a second advent. Certainly, a teacher appears again and again, but never as a repetition of a past form, which was a creative fulfillment for that specific living situation. Never again will Krishna, Zarathustra, or Jesus come back as persons recognizable as Krishna, Zarathustra, or Jesus. For the movement of the spirit is non-repetitive. You see, that which functions, the primordial creative energy which functions in the context of infinity and eternity, never repeats anything. It is continuously creative. That means continuously bringing into being something new. You see? This is quite different from the creativeness which we ascribe, say, to a musician, you see, that, oh, he has created a new symphony or a new song or whatever it is. He has procreated a new symphony. What is the difference between procreation and creation? We all know what biological procreation means. Now, all our science, philosophy, art, etc., is cultural procreation. It is true to type. I cannot give birth to an oak tree or to a tiger. or a mosquito, or an angel. I can't do that. I can only procreate a human being, true to type. Isn't that so? Now that is the kind of creativeness, this procreativeness, true to type, which belongs to the whole of the manifested world. It is procreative in all its aspects. Great poets, artists, scientists, they weren't creators, I would say. They were cultural procreators. But creation is something totally new. Infinity and eternity are completely different, entirely different from matter, from what is finite, what is temporal, and therefore what is mortal. You see? So creation through infinity and eternity is of a totally different order. Something utterly new comes into being. So none of these teachers of the past, this is one of the reasons why I completely reject the popular presentation of rebirth and reincarnation and so forth. These doctrines have been put out only by people who cling to their sense of ego. I am I, John Brown, and nobody else. And I, John Brown, have something in me which is immortal, which will continue forever and ever as an entity. No entity can continue forever and ever. An entity means a particular manifestation, and a particular manifestation always has a birth, a procedure, and a death. Now, if we really see that, we will lose all fear of death. And if we really see that there is no such thing as heaven or hell, we'll lose all fear of a hereafter, or all anxiety, whether, especially when we grow old and are approaching death, to think, my goodness, now how have I lived? Am I going to go into heaven, or am I going to have eternal torment? Absolute rubbish. Be free of all that and be happy and peaceful inside yourself, and you will find it much easier to release the true meaning of humanness and humanity from within yourself. The movement of the spirit is non-repetitive, invariably unique in every manifestation of its single essence. The teacher of today will draw afresh from the timeless spring of truth, and he will fill a new cup fashioned by the need of the new world age. Whoso has the heart to lift the cup to his burning lips will be healed, and then only live as himself. Are the earnest ones then to light their candles and search for the world teacher? Are they to watch for the new dawn when a world savior will come from on high and give a world teaching upon which, as a foundation, will be constructed the edifice of a world religion? No, that will never happen. The world has come to that position now, where it is waking up to the significance of individuality, indivisibility, that means, you see. The world is waking up to that. So, it will, as it progresses, it will wake up to the greater meaning, the spiritual meaning of individuality. Our sense of individuality implies that we are complete and whole units, separate units within ourselves, harmonious units. That is the individual. All right? But as consciousness evolves and culminates in holistic consciousness, one is aware not only in terms of this organism as the individual, but the totality is the one and only individual, the indivisible. It appears divisible because our organism is so constituted, and we have five senses and we have a brain, which has had a 600 million year evolution and contains the results of that tremendous evolution from the past in it, you see. This brain interprets what the senses see only in terms of the finite and the separate, the isolated, the temporal, the mortal, you see. So, as long as we are restricted to this kind of consciousness, dependent upon the senses and a brain which analyzes and separates out, you see, we will of course think always in terms of other people, other things and so forth. But when consciousness is holistic, then that separation and that isolativeness will disappear. Mind you, only the separation, only the isolativeness and separation in consciousness will disappear. In mind and consciousness, we shall be well aware of the unity. You will not be a separate you. You will be just another version of myself. I will be only another version of you. That is all, you see. So that now we have about 5,000 million on the globe today. 5,000 million people. I saw the figures, the latest figures. We passed the 4.5 mark in 1975, apparently. The 4.5 billion mark was passed in 1975. We are nearly 5 billion people in the world. Now, how are we conscious of them? Oh, 5 billion people. Everyone says, I don't know any of them. I'm not conscious of them, you see. Are you conscious of 5 billion people? Not at all. But with holistic consciousness, you will not be conscious of them as, oh, this is John, this is Mary, this is so and so. That's impossible. It would take a million years to get conscious of 5 billion people like that, you see. But we will be sensitive in that manner, which enables us always to be in harmonious relationship with the whole of humanity. You will be humanity, I will be humanity in its totality. That is the kind of consciousness towards which man is developing. I don't think you'll find this presented anywhere. I'm presenting it in modern terms because we live in a modern world with its knowledge, its progress, its outlook, and with all its deficiencies and troubles. Great teachers inspire and transform their devotees by the influence of their living presence. That is the great power which changes a person. Not just the words he speaks or the books he writes or whatever it is. It's what he is as a living being which affects the change. This presence is a silence. This influence is formless and unconditioned. To the light of reality, the living presence awakens the sleeper in the dark. The dark whose substance is thought and speech, whose drive proceeds from the egoistic misconception of self, whose binding power is the burdensome conditioning by the past and by environment. Of necessity, the perfected Holy One must speak to his listeners. The words are treasured. The words continue through time. Commentaries are written, and conflicting interpretations lead to fierce argument. We know that only too well and too unhappily in the world's history. And so, for the simple souls who hunger and thirst, there is but stale bread and sour wine. Formal religion is fossilized religion. The church and the temple and the sacred tomes and the postures of piety may thrill and elevate and comfort and entrance. Yet all too often they are monumental impediments to truth. They cover the living heart of religion with a vast rubble heap of illusions, mere pieces of death, leaving death to the dead. You know how Jesus said, "Let the dead bury the dead. Let the true man go to the living heart." This is one of the keynotes for today, that each man shall individually search out the living heart of his own free will and in his own way. This is frightfully important. Anything like militant evangelism and so forth is anathema, really. But of course people don't see it. It's their bread and butter. It satisfies their ego, pampers their vanity. I have been the servant of the Lord. Absolute nonsense. Unquestioning acceptance of authoritarian teaching marks the impotent. Let there be unceasing vigilant investigation of that which is. So shall each man see the truth. That wonderful arc in human history, extending over 2 millennia, which saw the emergence of the founders of the great religions, each in his own sphere, will not repeat its old shape. It is always new and different. The mechanical repetition of an expended pattern would prove but a monotony. Life discards the obsolete. Renewal is rebirth. Therefore, the world will not witness the rise of a new world-embracing religion and the establishment of a worldwide church which will either oust or absorb all other religious organizations. Nor will it see any existing religion do so, despite all militant evangelism, an activity characterizing the immature. A religious totalitarianism may prove an even greater evil than any of the secular ones. Look today, Shiite Muslims and Christians and goodness knows what not. You see what's happened? What's happening? This does not mean that the day of the holy ones is over. They have appeared through the ages and will continue to appear, whether they are recognized or not. As in all past instances, whatever the holy one of today or tomorrow will teach will be the expression of his individual realization of the truth. The truth is the spirit parent of the word of all the great teachers. In him who keeps the word, which means in him who lives the holy life, there arises the stainless vision of the truth. He enters into the measureless communion, which is the realization of the transcendent. He is the living word. What such realization means and what is involved in such realization is at the very heart of all religion. It is the main theme of this book.